Glad to see here, everyone here this morning. As always, to our guests, we welcome you to the Southeast Church of Christ. It is truly an honor to stand before you all on this first day of the week. So we are blessed to have a guest speaker here this morning. So yesterday was our 10th annual youth fellowship, and we're blessed that we had a successful turnout. The kids learned, as always, they learned a lot. And they were very joyful by the end of the event. So we thank everyone who participated, for everyone who led prayers on our behalf and for the organization. Thank you very much. Today, our brother agreed to stay and to teach and preach on this entire day. So at this time, before I introduce him, if you will, please turn off your cell phones or the volume on them. If you can turn off the any kind of electronics or tablets, we want to make sure that we give our God our undivided attention. So this morning, we are joined by Brother Anthony Scherfus. Brother Anthony Scherfus, he is the current preacher there at the Maubank Church of Christ. Our brother has been there for about 2 years now. He is a graduate of the Southwest School of Bible Studies. I believe he graduated in 2022, if I'm not mistaken. Our brother is accompanied by his beautiful wife, Haley. They've been married for the past 5 years. They have Tommy, their firstborn, and another one on the way, which we still don't know whether it's a boy or girl. So again, our brother has graciously agreed to stay here. Today, he'll be teaching and preaching. So without much ado, Brother Anthony, we leave the stage for you.
Good morning. It is a pleasure to see everybody this beautiful Lord's Day. I was talking with Obed a few weeks ago, and he said, you know, if you want, you can stay and do the Sunday morning. And any chance I get to preach the word, I try to jump at that opportunity. But I said, well, you know, is there anything that you are going through on the Bible class? You know, I know for a lot of members, at least for me personally, if I'm in a Bible class, I try my best to keep it going in this flow of the quarter that y'all are in and the topic discussed. And he said, well, we're going through the book of Deuteronomy right now. And I haven't preached or taught the book of Deuteronomy before, and so I'm going through it in times past as a student at a school. I was really excited to jump on this opportunity to study this book and to try and have a deeper understanding of it than what I did prior. And I'm not going to go deep into this book. That's for Obed to do. I'm just here for one day. And what I like to do is do summaries and overviews of each book of the Bible. And in fact, back at Maybank, where Haley and I labor, we every few quarters will have a class period of just going through sections of the Bible and dividing them into books of history, books of law, books of poetry, and so forth. And something that I was taught a long time ago was, in order to truly understand the details of Scripture, you have to look at the overall picture of the Bible. And it was described to me in this way. If you look at each verse as a puzzle piece for the chapter that it is in, and each chapter as a puzzle piece of the book that it is in, and each book a puzzle piece of the Bible as a whole that it is in, what you will do is, as you step back and look at the whole picture of the Bible, you will understand exactly what all of these tiny details mean because you understand the overall theme of the Bible. And if you were to summarize the Bible, we talked about this, let's see here, I think it was Thursday night at Northern Oaks with the EBS classes. If you were to summarize the Bible, maybe just pick one verse for the Bible. I believe that one verse, a good passage for that, would be Galatians chapter 3 and verse, I believe, 14. It talks about the promise that is given to Abraham that would be fulfilled through Jesus the Christ, that would be accessible to all mankind, which is pretty much what the entire Bible is all about. It is about the scheme of redemption. How is mankind going to be redeemed from what they have done? Bought back, restored. Well, from the very beginning, you see prophecy after prophecy after prophecy, promise after promise. And each book points to the cross in some way, shape, or form. And if you were to look at the first five books of the Bible, because we're going to be looking at Deuteronomy, and Brother Obed will be coming out here in just a moment, right now actually, and he has some handouts for you. And these handouts are going to be for, as we go through this class, that you will be, we will all fill out each section of the book of Deuteronomy so that we can have a better understanding of the book. If you were to summarize the book of Genesis, how would you summarize it? Thank you, brother. If you were to put it into one small sentence, how would you explain that? Okay, so you would describe it as the foundation. What about the book of Exodus? You have the law, you have law and liberty, okay. What about the book of Numbers?
Census.
Census. About the book of Leviticus?
Sacrifice.
Sacrifice. How would you describe the book of Deuteronomy?
Instruction,
okay. If you look at the book of Genesis, and you were to summarize this, you could really summarize it in this way. Genesis is about the promises of God. Think about all the promises that God makes throughout the Bible, but just think about how many are in one book, in the book of Genesis. He makes a promise to Adam and Eve. He makes a promise through a prophecy to Satan, that I promise that you are going to be defeated. He makes a promise to Cain. I promise that nothing's going to happen to you. I'll put a mark on you so that way you're identified and that nobody will kill you. He makes multiple promises to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob. And he is with Joseph throughout all of his life. It is a book of promises, a foundation. Really, it's the promises that say, I promise in this book I'm going to show you for the remainder of the Bible how I'm going to restore y'all. And you could summarize, you could have a key verse, Genesis chapter 3 and verse 15. That's the key passage really for the entire book of Genesis, because it doesn't just focus in on the promise to Abraham. It's the promise to all of mankind that he would eventually focus in through Abraham. Then you've got the book of Exodus, the redemption of God. They are restored back out of, they are in captivity, and they are brought out, and they are given a law. And interestingly, in the book of Exodus, you have really the book of Leviticus and the book of Numbers kind of taking place within Exodus, chronologically speaking. And again, we don't have time to go through all of these and explain each book. We're trying to focus in on the book of Deuteronomy. Need some more copies? Okay. And so we're going to give you key passages so you can go back and look for yourself and do a deeper study. A good key passage for the book of Exodus is chapter 6, verses 6 through 8. And I do want to read this passage because it is relevant to what we're going to be discussing. It says, "Say therefore to the sons of Israel, I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians, and I will deliver you from their bondage. And I will also redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great judgments. Then I will take you for my people, and I will be your God, and you shall know that I am your God, who brought you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. And I will bring you to the land which I swore to give to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and I will give it to you for a possession. I am the Lord." If you were to look at this passage, as well as a section in Exodus chapter 3 at the burning bush, you will see that this is actually a type of the gospel. Because when Jesus, in the book of John, is speaking to the Jews, he says, I have come with an outstretched arm to free you from slavery. And the Jews, in their wisdom, say, we've never been enslaved to anybody, which is absolutely ridiculous because you could count on your hands, maybe even more than your hands, on how many nations they have been enslaved to throughout their generations. And Jesus says, I'm not here to free you from any one nation. I'm here to free you from the bondage of sin. And so you've got the book of Exodus as really a type of the gospel. And then you have the book of Leviticus, the holiness of God. How can an unholy people approach a holy God? That's what the book of Leviticus is all about. And the book of Leviticus and the book of Deuteronomy are very similar because they're books of law. Those two specifically are all about law. But Leviticus is a law given to the priests, and the book of Deuteronomy is the law unto the people. And so the book of Leviticus is a type of Jesus' priesthood, and then Deuteronomy is a type of kingdom life for the Christians that you could actually make a lot of parallels in Matthew chapters 5, 6, and 7. And then you've got the book of Numbers, the authority of God. Now, I didn't give you the key verse for Leviticus, Leviticus chapter 19 and verse 2. But in the book of Numbers, you have the authority of God. The reason it's the authority of God is because he is challenged almost every single chapter. His authority is challenged. His leaders are challenged. And there's a constant rebellion. And if you look at when they start out to where they end, at the very end of the book, you have a census, and you see that their numbers are dwindling just very steadily. And the reason for that is because they rebel against God. Well, Deuteronomy is a very good segue into the books of history from the books of law. Because in the book of Deuteronomy, you have five main sections. You have a historical section. You've got a section of law. And then you have a poetry section, which kind of leads into a farewell. The historical section, which is the first three chapters, if you look at your handout under A New Generation, you have Moses talking to the new generation of Israel. And you read about this new generation rising up in the book of Numbers. And as this generation of old is dying out because of their rebellion against God and their lack of faith, Moses, being closer to the end of his life, he says, hey, I'm not going to be able to go into the promised land with you, so this is going to be my farewell speech. And in my farewell speech, I am going to make sure that you have everything you need to be successful in this new land. Joshua is going to take over. I have been mentoring him for many years now. Trust in him because he trusts in God. That's Joshua chapter 1. Be strong and courageous, for I am with you. Okay? Then Joshua would say the same thing to the people. We need to be strong and courageous because God is with us. And the people say, we will be strong and courageous because God is with us. But Deuteronomy is really a series of sermons. And you could technically divide them into 4 to 5 different sermons. The first one, the first sermon, is the history sermon. He says, your parents were terrible. He says, I'm sorry that you had to deal with them as parents because they did not do what they were supposed to as parents. And he would say what they were supposed to do in Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 1 and following. They were supposed to be with you by the wayside when you go down to sleep, when you're up, when anywhere you were, they were supposed to be teaching you the law. And they didn't do that properly. So you, as the next generation of parents, succeed where your parents failed. And so he goes through this historical background in chapters 1 to 3. And then as he does this, he says, now let's get into the law section. He says, let's first break down this law. If you were to look at the laws given, he gets pretty specific. But if you step back, notice how you've got the scroll here and then the tablets on the top right of the outline here. You could technically summarize two main sections of law. You have what's called the Shema, The Shema is mentioned in Deuteronomy chapter 6 and summarized, "The Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your soul, and with all your strength." And then he would say, you as parents need to understand this and ingrain this Shema in the minds of your children. Wrap it around their arm, wrap it around their head, so it's everywhere. And then he would go into a new section, the collections of laws, in chapters 12 to 26. In 12 to 26, if you were to summarize it, it could be summarized in this way: love your neighbor as yourself. So really what he does is he summarizes the law of Moses with the two greatest commandments. Love the Lord your God, and the second is like unto it, love your neighbor as yourself. And then his little poem and farewell speech in chapter 27 to 30. This isn't really his farewell poem. This is his, really, a lament. He says, after giving all of the instructions in great detail, giving them a history lesson, he says in chapters 27 to 30, I can't tell you just how much I know you're going to fail. It's like, well, Moses, I appreciate the confidence boost here. You said that our parents were terrible parents and we need to do better, but we're not going to. He says, look, you're human. I've made mistakes. You've made mistakes. Even though I have given you through, God has given you through me, this law and everything you need to know in order to succeed, he says, it doesn't matter because you're going to fail anyway. Not because of a lack of instruction, not because of a lack of information on God's part or a lack of leadership on my part. It's going to be because of a lack of obedience on your part. And we see that come to fruition in the book of Joshua with Achan, people like Achan. But then you really see it in the book of Judges. Because at the very end of the book of Joshua, Joshua chapter 24, he would say this, he would give this great speech as they're fixing to go into the land and finally take the last parts of the land for themselves. He would say, choose you this day whom you are going to serve, whether it's the God of the Amorites in whose land that you dwell or the gods of your fathers. But as for me and my house, we're going to be serving the Lord. Even if I'm the only one, I'm going to be serving God. Well, the generation said, we can't serve any other gods. God is the only true God. They remembered the Shema. The Lord our God, the Lord, the only one is really what it means in the Hebrew. The Lord our God, the only one God. God's the only one, so we can't worship any other God because there is no other God. And so the book of Judges begins. They were successful until they weren't. Well, what happened? Well, Joshua and the elders, they died off, and that generation was faithful. Then you have the generation after them. They were faithful, but then there arose a generation who knew not God. And it's very interesting how if you look throughout the Scriptures, even into the New Testament, it almost seems like every third, maybe fourth generation falls away. And it's because of a lack of knowledge. It's because of a lack of zeal. And it's because of too much comfort. They get comfortable with the blessings they have. Oh, we don't need God anymore. And then they fall into wickedness, and God says, okay, if you don't need me anymore, I'm not going to be here. And then they fall into captivity, and then they cry out, Lord, please save us, so he would send a judge. The judge would deliver them, they go back to being obedient, and then two generations later, guess what happens? Ah, we don't need God anymore, because we're fine. And it's just this pendulum that goes back and forth. Moses says, this is what's going to happen, word for word. And he says, I'm not going to be able to be there to stop it like I was in the book of Numbers. And Joshua's not going to be there to stop it like he's going to in the book of Joshua. This is why you need to be faithful to the law, because your obedience is crucial. And then after he gives this farewell speech of, I know you're going to mess up, but hey, it's okay. God has given you a way to come back. He gives a farewell poem in chapters 31 to 34. And you can almost see the tears in Joshua's eyes as he's listening to this poem of Moses. And even though it's to the people, imagine your mentor is about to die. A mentor of 40 plus years. And he says, I'm passing the staff over to you. I'm fixing to walk up this mountain and you're not going to see me again. So I need you to understand this, Joshua. And he says, Israel, you guys need to listen. And he would give this farewell poem of, you will only be as successful as your obedience is strong to God. And then he waves his farewells, and he goes up a mountain and he dies, and God takes him. And that's where the book of Joshua comes in. A lot of us kind of just end at Deuteronomy. Okay, that's the end of the books of law. Let's start this new section. Well, Joshua, even though it's the book of history, it's a continuation, kind of a sequel to the book of Deuteronomy. The book of Joshua begins with him holding the staff, and he's like, oh no, what am I going to do? My mentor is gone. He's always been here, and that's the book begins with God saying, hey, Moses was not God. I'm God. He was your mentor, yes, but you need to be strong and courageous, not because Moses was with you, but because I am with you. And so it picks up building with God, building off of what Moses preached in the book of Deuteronomy. It's fresh on their minds. Be strong and courageous, for I am with you. And then Joshua looks at the people and says, hey, we are going to go into the land. Are you with me? And the people, just hearing Moses' speech in five sermons, says, we'll be with you as long as you hold to what Moses just said. As long as you are a godly leader, we'll follow you. So they understand, okay, this is serious business. We're fixing to go into war, and we just lost one of our greatest leaders, Moses. So what are we going to do? Well, Moses ingrained in their heads, trust in God, trust in God, be obedient to the Lord, follow God. Now, kind of summarized our summary here. So what we're going to do is, in a little bit of more detail, that way you can kind of fill these things out, we are going to take a look at the book of Deuteronomy with the next 20 minutes or so. Because again, this is just a summary. We're not going to go verse by verse, chapter by chapter. This is simply an overview so we can have a better understanding of the book. So when Brother Obed goes through it in greater detail, you can say, ah, I know what this is about because we know the bigger picture. We know exactly what this book is about. Before we do that, are there any questions or comments about what we've discussed? This is a Bible class, after all. And so I want to try and have some interaction. This is really just introduction material. We're fixing to actually get into the class so we can start our time now. So, any questions or comments? Okay. So yesterday, I had to call the kids out by name. And what you don't know is I may or may have not gotten the directory from Brother Obed, so I know every single one of y'all's names, and I can call y'all, but I didn't actually do that. But I would like to have some interaction because I learn from my brethren. Just because I'm up here leading the Bible study, I learn more really from my brethren, because y'all may see something that I don't, and if you make that comment, then I can put that in my notes, and I can then build off of that, and we can edify one another through our studies. So, with that being said, let's look at chapters 1 to 3. If you were to look at this section, really, I know I said there's five sections, but I love to simplify things. I'm a very simple creature. I never went to college. I graduated high school, and that's pretty much my only degree, okay, a high school degree. I'm from the backwoods of Tennessee. If you can simplify it for me, that's the best you can do for me. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to simplify even these five main sections into three. You have Moses' opening speech, chapters 1 through 11. Okay, Moses' opening speech, did I say 5 through 11? It's supposed to be 1 through 11. Then you have section number 2, 12 to 26, which is the collection of laws. I have it titled Collection of Laws as a smaller section, but really, it goes into great detail and kind of summarizes it as collection of laws. Laws here, 12
to 26.
And then, the latter part, you have chapters 27 to 34, the speech and death. So really, let's see here, 27 to, let's say 36, 34. There's not 36 chapters. What am I doing? So you can kind of see, if you summarize it, it's somewhat bookended. You've got two different speeches and then a collection of laws. Something I love to do, and I say I like to simplify things, but if you look at a few nitty-gritty details, something that will aid you in your studies is how to read a book. And I'm not just talking about the Bible, I'm talking about any book. There are different types and genres of literature. Does anybody know what some of those genres are? You've got fiction,
nonfiction.
Okay, now that we have categorized them by the two, let's go into greater detail. Fantasy. You got what? Okay. Okay, poetry. Huh? Somebody say something? You've got narrative. You've got, let's see, is it not bibliography? Okay, you got history, we got history. You've got, I'm going blank, it's about yourself. Autobiography, there you go, autobiography. You've got, let's see here, letters. I mean, there are collections of books of just old letters, especially during World War I, World War II, and the Civil War era, where they would write back to each other. So you've got different types of literature. Well, I've got a question. Would you read poetry the same way you would read an autobiography? So why would we try to do the same thing with the books of the Bible? You see what I'm getting at? There's different types of literature in the books of the Bible. You've got narrative, you've got history, you've got poetry, you've got prophetic or apocalyptic, which when people hear the word apocalyptic, they think, oh man, this is going to be incredibly difficult. It's not. All apocalyptic means is unveiling or to reveal, which is interesting because people think apocalyptic, I'm not going to be able to understand the revelation of it. And the meaning of apocalyptic is it has been revealed to you. It's kind of ironic. So you got different types of literature. How would you classify the book of Deuteronomy?
The law repeated.
Okay, you've got the law repeated. So what would law fall under of category of literature? If you were to read the laws of the United States of America, what would that really be classified as, you think? Do what?
Constitution.
Constitution. Instructional. Constitutional, instructional, but in the book of Deuteronomy, you don't just have one type of literature. Notice, you have a speech at the beginning, it's history. You've got a constitution or instruction. Then you have poetry at the very end. So, if I'm going to read this, I need to figure out what to look for in the types of literature and transitions between the two. And so if I'm reading the beginning and it's an introduction or history lesson, then he goes into the law, my mind needs to switch. Okay, I'm no longer reading history. Therefore, I need to be observant and put my history glasses aside and now start asking questions as a lawyer rather than questions as a historian, because they ask different questions. As a historian, what kind of questions would you ask? The hows, the whens, the wheres. What kind of question would you ask as a lawyer?
More specific.
You'd
perhaps be looking for evidence. You'd be looking for witnesses. You'd be looking for motive. Okay? So I'm not going to ask the same question as a historian as I would as a lawyer. And so as I'm reading through Scripture, this is why I don't like chapter and verse numbers, because those aren't inspired. What's inspired is the Word of God. And so as you're reading through, ignore the numbers. It's like, well, you've got the numbers here. Yeah, but that's because we're breaking down and it just happens to be that way. I didn't just pick a few numbers and say, you know, I like keeping the ones together, so I'm going to have 1 through 11. That's not how that works. What you do is you look through the sections and you see transitions. Look for key words, key phrases. Look for the transition of not just topic, but also a transition of literature, the types of literature. With that being said, I almost forgot the reason I brought all this up. One thing about the books of law that summarize as the books of law, Genesis through Deuteronomy. Who here knows anything about Hebrew literature? It's different from Greek and Roman literature. The Hebrews, the Jewish people, love patterns. They are obsessed with numbers. They are obsessed with patterns. They love structure. And so if you look at poetry, specifically the book of Psalms, you've got acrostics, a structure of poetry, where each word in the beginning of each section is a letter which may spell out something. My favorite is something called a chiasm. Does anybody know what a chiastic structure is? I think I'm pulling a Panini here. Brother Obed. Okay, it goes down and goes up. It gets its name from the Greek letter chi. And the point of it is, right in the middle is going to be the main point. So if you look at the books of law, how many books of law are there? How many books of law are there? Genesis through Deuteronomy. There you go. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. In Genesis, you've got the promise, I'm going to fix this. In Deuteronomy, you have, I promise that I'm going to be with you if you promise to be with me. Exodus, I'm going to get you out of this. Numbers, we don't want to get out of this. But then right in the middle, you have the Day of Atonement. This is how I'm going to fix this and get you out of it, even though you don't want to. And then when you realize you do, you can come back to me. And each book has a similar structure. So all of it points to the Day of Atonement. So I say all of that to say this. In the book of Deuteronomy, you still have this structure. And the structure right in the middle, let's see if I can get back down to my notes here. Right in the middle of Deuteronomy, the five sections that you have. Let's see here. Numbers, Deuteronomy. Bring it back up. You have... here it is. You have 12 to 26, the central core, the stipulation of the covenant. That's the central part of this whole book. The stipulation of the covenant is, hey, which is the collection of laws on your handout here in section number 3. God, that deals with the worship and leadership and then the civil laws and social justice system. And it's like, man, this is sounding very political here. It's not necessarily talking about politics. It's talking about their structure within their religion that God has given them. And so in chapters 1 through 11, you have Moses' opening speech that God was gracious to a people that rebelled that you read about in Exodus and Leviticus and even all the way back into Genesis. But chapters 4 through 11... Moses calls to covenant faithfulness. He says, look, even though your parents weren't faithful, that doesn't determine your outcome. Just because your parents failed doesn't mean you have to fail. So how can you be successful? He says, let me tell you about the Shema. The Shema is, he says, listen, Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord alone, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. That's specifically chapter 6, verses 4 to 5. And if you look at this, you have three main concepts in the Shema. He says, listen, the Lord alone, it's only one, you need to love. We talked about this yesterday with the youth. Somebody asked a really good question. We were talking about the ant and how the ant needs to be fulfilling its purpose. And what is our purpose as human beings, as Christians? Well, Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse 14. The fear of God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. Well, somebody asked the question, what does it mean to fear God? I thought, that is an excellent question. What does it mean? Let's see if you can answer this based off of Scripture. What does it mean to truly fear God? Obey. If you were to look at John chapter 14 and verse 15, it says, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. There's the obedience. But then in the next chapter, he explains what the commandment is. He says in chapter 15 and verse 12, this is the commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that one lay down his life for his friends. And you are my friends, Jesus says. So what it means to fear God, it means to love God. And love God not with a sensual love like the world says, and a perverted love, but a sacrificial love, a love that obeys. For God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, that whoever believes has trust that leads one to obedience. That's what pistuo means in the Greek there in that context. Leads one to obedience, a trust that obeys. He who believes shall not perish, but have everlasting life. That's what God is telling His people. I love you enough to send you a mediator, Moses, who can explain this to you. A people that is unholy, and I want an unholy people to be able to approach me, but the only way you can do that is if you're like me. If you are holy yourself. How can I do that, God? Well, first, you need to listen. Secondly, you need to understand there is only one God, and that one God is me. Therefore, you need to love me with every part of who you are, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. Love the Lord your God with your heart, mind, soul, strength. Every aspect of man, you love God with it. And he would point back to the kingdom of priests that's mentioned in Exodus chapter 19. This having wisdom and justice and listening and love. The word listen means to obey. It doesn't just mean, hey, but I need, if you get anything out of this, make sure this goes in your ear. That's not what he says in listen. The Hebrew word for listen here in Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 4 is, obey Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord alone. He's not just saying, I need you to listen. He says, I need you to obey what I am about to tell you. And love, in the Hebrew, it carries with it the idea of devotion. I am devoted to you. It's not a love that the world says, which is, hey, I'm going to love you with my emotion and body. Because that's, as Solomon would say, that's, we got 5 minutes. He said, Solomon would say, that's vanity. What you need to do is have a love of devotion, fear God and keep His commandments. That's devotion. That's showing true love. And then he says, the Lord alone, literally the Lord is one. Israel is to worship only one God and no longer worship these gods of the Amorites in whose land they dwell. They're no longer to worship the gods of the Egyptians because God killed them back in the book of Exodus with the 10 plagues. He says, there's only one God here. I'm the only one, so you need to be devoted to me and be obedient. And then he would go into the collection of laws, 12 to 26. In 12 to 26, Moses, he would say there are two really main sections here dealing with the law. The first two you see is worship and leadership. Worship, he deals a lot with tithing, giving one-tenth of what you have. You give one-tenth to the priesthood, and you give one-tenth, putting it back, and eventually you'll give it to the poor. If you look at the reason why, the Levitical priesthood, they didn't receive plots of land. They had cities, but what was their portion? Their service to God. So they didn't have property. They had a job to do. And so God says, as the priesthood for me, I'm going to make sure that you're taken care of and that you are supported by your fellow brethren. Which is interesting, as the new royal priesthood, guess what we have? We've got preachers and elders and deacons and Christians and missionaries and all of these different roles that we fulfill. And guess what we do as brethren? We support each other financially, monetarily, even with food and shelter. Hey, stay at my home when you come down here. I don't have a place to stay. Well, guess what Brother Obed is doing for his brethren right now? Hey, him and Shar, we're going to take you in. We'll provide for you because you don't have a place to stay in this area. That's what God says to do for the Levitical priesthood. You take care of them because they're the ones offering the sacrifices. And then you have this next section, the leadership and the social justice system. Do you remember what Jesus says concerning love the Lord your God and love your neighbor as yourself? He says, this hangs the law and what? The prophets. Not just the law, but the law and the prophets. He makes mention of the law and the prophets in the book of Deuteronomy. He says, you are subject and under the authority of the law of God and the prophets that God sends to you. The word prophet in the Hebrew, you see it a lot in the book of 1 Samuel. The word prophet simply means to bubble up or bubble over. So a prophet of God or a prophet of the law was one who bubbled up or overflowed with the law of God, which you see exactly with the minor prophets and even the major prophets. But the minor prophets, they would say, thus says the Lord, do A, B, or C. And you would see even within the minor prophets, they would focus in on the kings. They would focus in on a section for the elders of the Jewish people. They would focus in on the judges of the judicial system. And they would go through and say, hey, even you priests, you are not doing the sacrifices right. Well, the law and the prophets section, he says, guys, some of you are going to become elders, some of you are going to become kings, and some of you are going to become priests. Y'all, even though y'all have authority and power, y'all are still under the authority of God. And when God sends this law to you, and he sends people who bubble over with the law, you need to listen to them. There is a reason the prophets were murdered. Because the people knew we're technically in subject to them and they're going against what we want. So if we just get them out of the picture, then we can continue being the leaders. Moses says, I know you're going to fail. You need to listen to these people. And I wish we had more time to talk about the civil law justice system because it's very unique to the Jews. But with the little time that we've got, let's move over to this last section. The speech and death of Moses. Well, let me just give you this very quickly. In 27 to 30, you have the warning and ultimatum of Moses, which is the, I want you to succeed, but I know you're going to fail. And it's not like he's bashing them. Imagine a grandfather looking at their young grandchild that's fixing to leave the house of their parent. And he says, I really want you to succeed, but I'm very disappointed in what you're going to do. It's more of a grandfather talking to his grandchildren, saying, I love you guys very much, and my heart aches because I'm not going to be able to be there to stop it. So I know you're going to mess up. Therefore, I'm going to give you a map to come back It's because I'm not going to be here. And then the poem and warning in chapter 32 and the poem of blessing in chapter 33, Moses' last words as he gives the staff over to Joshua and says, Joshua, it's your time now. You need to be strong and courageous because I'm not going to be here. And that's where Joshua picks up in the next book. He's saying, I don't know if I can do this, God. And God says, oh, I know you can't. But don't worry, I'm going to be with you. Be strong and courageous. Being courageous doesn't mean you're not scared. It means you're scared, but you're still going to do something about it. He doesn't tell Joshua, don't be afraid. He says, be strong and be full of courage. Even though you're scared, no, I'm going to be with you. So you just keep doing what you're doing, and I will make sure you succeed if you are faithful to the covenant that Moses just gave you a minute ago before he died. So that's the book of Deuteronomy. Any questions or comments before we close? Nothing at all? Man, okay. I appreciate your time.